In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred again with you in Little Steven's Underground Garage as we get another Coolest Conversations broadcast underway. Remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review. Joining me is Jen Razavi, and she is one of the guitar players in the Southern California pop-punk band The Bomb Pops. Their latest album is Death in Venice Beach, is out on Fat Records, and it features our recent coolest song in the world, In the Doghouse. Let's hear some of that now, and then I'll be back with Jen Razavi for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time now for your Friday's Coolest Conversations. And joining me today is Jen Razavi, one of the singers and guitar players in the Bomb Pops. How are you, Jen?
Oh, I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I've got to ask you, are you safely hunkered and bunkered?
I am so safely hunkered and bunkered. I have contact with no one else. So, yeah, I'm good. I'm good and alone and isolated.
Oh, man, so the band doesn't, like, hang out all together in, like, kind of a Monkey's Playhouse thing, you know? You
guys are all... Oh, not at all. Not at all. Actually, Polly is a type 1 diabetic, and very early on during this whole quarantine situation, we decided it's just best we don't go around her, you know, being high risk.
Oh, fine. Well, look, whenever we're on the other side of this horrible event... What's the first thing you want to do? Play a show, go out to eat, go to the beach, play crazy golf? What do you want to do the first
thing? Oh, my goodness. Just, like, kind of casually brush my elbow up against another person's elbow and not feel weird about it. Something small like that, really. No, but I'd love to get to band practice. We were practicing heavily for this tour, and then that all stopped so much that we left some of our gear and guitar at our studio where we practice, and... It's just, it all happened so fast. I would love to just get back to playing these songs with the whole band, really.
Absolutely. Well, I've got some conflicting notes about you guys. I know you can help me out. So the press release I was sent about the new album, Death in Venice Beach, talks about how the City of Angels, Los Angeles, is the kind of a muse for the latest full length. And also you guys are from L.A., but the other stuff I was sent was telling me that you guys are a San Diego band. So my guess is that maybe the band formed in San Diego and then you guys moved to L.A. at some point. What, Jen, is the series of events?
Yes. Well, Polly and myself, we started the band, and we are from North San Diego County, the Tri-City region, Carlsbad, Oceanside Vista, California. And that is where the band originated. And we played for many years in the San Diego punk scene. But then when we got our rhythm section as it is now, which is Josh and Neil, they are both actually from the high desert, so Apple Valley, Hesperia area. and they were in Los Angeles. So we started kind of practicing in LA once we got those guys. Pauly moved to LA, and I was the only one still in San Diego. So now we all reside in Los Angeles. I was actually born in Los Angeles County in Diamond Bar, a suburb up on the east side of the county. And no, we've just all, one thing that we all have in common is that we absolutely love this city. There's something inspiring about it. You feel it in the air. It's exciting. It's kind of where the band really grew and took place to what it is now, although we started in San Diego. We're pretty proud of both areas, call our home, but Los Angeles, you know, it's where we are. It's where we became the band that we are, the family band that we are, was the LA punk scene, and we're happy to call it home.
What one thing I've read is that you met Pauly when you were like 18 and she was 13. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's when I first saw Pauly. It's really weird because, you know, I was senior in high school and she was, you know, just getting into high school, middle school at the time. And there were a lot of girls playing in bands. I remember I was the only one in my high school and I saw this cute girl playing guitar and she was so good, but you know, she was way too young to hang out with a senior in high school. And so over the years I saw her at this music studio that we both went to, and the day I saw her drive up in a truck, I was like, oh, she's old enough to hang out with now and I want to be her friend. And weird like friendship to kind of court, but yeah, that's how it started. Yeah.
Well, did you guys actually play together in a band back then?
Yeah, it was a music studio where she was taking guitar lessons, and the owner of the studio also had rooms that you could rent out and lockout rooms you could rent out hourly and practice it. And I had been practicing there with some friends, but she was playing in a band with a guitar teacher, and they asked me to join that band. I played bass, which I had never played bass before. So that's how I got to know her and play with her, like in a band. And then we just started our own thing really shortly after that. It's like, oh, let's just do our own thing. It's more fun.
Right. And that band, I've read it described as being a metal band. Is that right?
Sort of. Yeah. It's like the guy loved Cinderella and stuff like that. So
did you ever play out live?
Uh-huh.
I mean, did you go the whole nine yards? Was there a lot of moose abuse, firecracker bangs, or anything like that? Did you dress up?
No. We played a few shows, and it was a cool experience. I got our chops pretty good, because the guy was writing just weird riffs, and it made us really good players being in that band.
Talking about you guys being as players, when did you start playing, and was guitar your first instrument?
Yeah, I started playing guitar when I was 11, I believe, 11 or 12, and guitar was my first instrument. My dad played guitar, and so there was always one lying around. And I know Pauly, her first instrument was piano, and she played piano at a very young age, and then she moved on to guitar as well. I think she also played drums. Her dad had a drum set. So both of us started playing at a pretty young age, yeah.
And why did you start playing?
I remember that I just falling in love with the genre of punk, specifically pop punk at the time, bands like Blink-182 and Green Day. And around that same time, when I really got into it and noticed that that's what I was into, you know, it's like, oh, my dad has a guitar. This guitar has been here my whole life. I'm going to just start playing. Yeah, I think Pauly is same kind of story. I think her dad got her into music as well. She always says that her dad introduced her to the Ramones and Violent Femmes and stuff like that.
Cool. So there's about a 5-year difference between you two. So I was wondering, you know, as teens are still quite young folks, a lot of changes going on mentally still. Was your relationship ever like a big sister, little sister thing, or just an equal footing as friends? And what is it now?
Oh, I think it was definitely, I was kind of big sister, kind of mom vibe for a while. You know, we're completely equals, and we have been for a very long time. But I remember when we were first hanging out, it was very much big sister kind of vibes. But we were always more equal. We were always, from the moment we started getting together, she was my best friend, you know. Age didn't matter really at all, except that, of course, I would worry about her, but I worry about everyone. So it's just kind of my nature. And then it got to a point where it's like, she's fine. She knows what she's doing. And she's actually a mother of, you know, she has a kid. So she's more of a mom in that sense than I am. But I'm still band mom. I'm still the warrior, and I'm going to wrangle everyone to a certain extent.
All right. Well, here's a question about being a band mom and a wrangler. So it was still about 10 years to get your debut album out, but you had some EPs along the way. How many times since forming in 2007 did you think, man, this is just not worth the grief? And what kept you focused?
Never once have I thought that it's not worth the grief. Like, it's never once, and I don't think Polly ever once thought that either. It's just the love for the genre, more than anything. I mean, I'm such a huge fan of punk, pop punk specifically. I can't imagine not listening to it and not being a part of it. But, you know, we gave up a lot of normalcy to do this kind of thing, and I wouldn't trade it for the world, even if it's just the experiences that we've had under our belt so far, which would be opening up for our favorite bands, playing with our kind of peers that have grown into be some of my favorite bands, traveling the world, touring the world with each other, with our songs. And we're at the point now where it's when we go on tour, people sing our songs. And so one of the biggest things you can hope for as a band is to be a band where people sing along.
Well, let's talk about one of those songs, In the Doghouse. It's our coolest song in the world this week off the new album, Death in Venice Beach. Now, who wrote that tune?
That is a song that I wrote.
And that's based on a true story?
Yes, it is. And just for how, just to a little bit of how the Bomb Pops work, you know, we are a dual vocalist band. So there are songs that Polly writes and there are songs that I write. And then we do the harmonies on each other's songs. So you will hear Polly's voice in that song as well. But yeah, that is a true story with a lot of metaphors going on in there, clearly. And that's kind of something that you'll find a lot on that album. But yeah, it was based off of an experience in my life. And yeah, at the time I was living in Hollywood. So that's kind of the reference to like tourists on the Boulevard of Stars. I'm lost and wandering through my backyard. And it was kind of one of these things. And I would always trip on that when I lived in Hollywood. I lived right off of Hollywood Boulevard, on a street called Sycamore, kind of right behind the Magic Castle. And that part of Hollywood is interesting because, I mean, I was on Hollywood Boulevard. My street was such a pain to go anywhere. Either you're going up Franklin or down Hollywood Boulevard. So, but something about being just tucked even one block away from Hollywood Boulevard kind of felt like a neighborhood.
Yeah.
But then you're in this part of Los Angeles that's almost like Times Square. You know, it's like the craziest, most tourist part of Los Angeles. But that was also my backyard. So, you know, if I wanted to go down to Rite Aid and get some snacks, I'd have to walk through all of that. And I remember a couple of times I'd just be in my bathrobe and I'm like, you know what? I can do this here because there are crazier people walking around on Hollywood Boulevard than me in my bathrobe. I'm just going to go for it.
Well, Death in Venice Beach, the album, when and where did you record it?
Well, we recorded it in the summer last year, so June through in July of 2019 in Denver, Colorado, actually, at a studio called Black in Bloom, which is owned by Chris Fogel, and he engineered and produced the Tom Ben Horan, but Black and Bloom in Denver, Colorado. Yeah, Chris Fogel. He's in a band called The Gamut. It's a favorite from everyone in the band. We all love this band called The Gamut. Everyone should give them a listen. G-A-M-I-T-S.
Well, that's cool, because I was going to ask you about Chris. So you recorded with him. He produced it along with, who's this guy, Yotam Ben-Horon?
Yeah, exactly.
What was the connection there to get him involved?
Well, Yotam Ben-Horon is in a band called Useless ID, another great band. They're actually on Fat Records as well. But we were set to go record with Chris Fogel. Just Chris Fogel. We did our first full length on Fat with Chris Fogel, Fear of Missing Out. He engineered and produced it. And we were going to do the same thing with him. We had a great experience with him. It's wonderful working with him. But Fat Mike, who is the owner of our record label, Fat Records, he suggested that we consider having Yotam Ben-Horon produce it. He just felt like he was a really great fit for us. Fat Mike has a kind of a production team called the Decomposers, and you know, it's Fat Mike, Yotam Ben-Horon, Johnny, and this guy Baz. And so he's like, you should go with Yotam. I think Yotam, out of my guys, you know, go with them both if you can. And so we did. And, you know, Chris Fogel and Yotam Ben-Horon, they had actually done some stuff together in the past.
Oh, good.
So it made sense. It clicked. I was like, you know what? That would work. And they were both cool with it. And it ended up being like the absolute best production team working with the both of them throughout it. It was wonderful. So happy to have them both involved.
The album's title, that's an allusion to what the Thomas Mann novella, Death in Venice. That's some light reading. What drew you to reading that?
Well, it was a book my dad had suggested I read. And I had, so there was something like off-putting about it because it's a little bit perverse. And I was like, oh, why am I going to read that? I didn't revisit it for a very long time. And then I had recently, actually, a few years ago, spent some time in Venice. I lived in Venice, Italy, outside in the countryside of Veneto for about 5 months. And so that kind of sparked my interest in this book again. And I brought a tour with me. Actually, the record was already done. We were in the process of mixing it. And last October, we went on tour and I brought this book with me. And we hadn't named the album yet. We were kind of stuck on this. We had a couple names and we were going to go with one name. And it just didn't, I don't know, I just wasn't excited about it, but I was kind of okay with it. And then one day in the van, I was like, you know what? I'm going to just think really hard. There's got to be something better. Sometimes you want to pull an album name from like titles of the songs. That wasn't just happening. Yeah. And I wanted to think about something that related to Los Angeles. And I was reading this book, and it's about a couple interesting things really quickly. I know we don't have too much time, but it's about like the price of living an artistic life, basically. And then, I was like, Death in Venice Beach. Well, there's the LA connection. This is great. But coincidentally, this album was released a few weeks ago on Friday, March 13th. So Friday, the 13th of March, right when this, a few days after this was, deemed a pandemic. But this book takes place in 1911 in Venice, Italy, during the cholera pandemic. So This book is about a pandemic and our album was released during a pandemic. It's kind of weird.
Well, what are you reading now?
Oh, I'm reading a book, Collector, by John Fowles, and it seems to be the Silence of the Lambs might have taken some inspiration from this book. I don't know if that's correct or not. Huh. It's really, really interesting book, kind of creepy, but I'm way into it right now.
Cool. Well, in addition to In the Doghouse, a track off Death in Venice Beach I really enjoy is Sad to Me. And that one, to me at least, has got kind of a Kim Shattuck or Muffs lilt to it. Who wrote that? Who wrote Sad to Me?
That is a Polly song. And that's totally a wonderful compliment.
Are you guys Muffs fans at all then?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Polly and I are big Muffs fans. And Polly's got that kind of growly yell thing. I can't. Polly's got down.
Hey, a Southbound Stranger, that's another one I wanted to ask you about. Now, who's responsible for Southbound Stranger?
That's a Paul song as well.
I was going to go. I've kind of picked out your voices a little bit. And I have to say, honestly, so first time I'm listening to it, and then it gets to the end there, pretty heavy at the end. I mean, and I just busted out loud. I said, girl, no man is worth blowing your brains out, honey.
No, I mean, of course not.
Yeah, go ahead.
But that's actually, it's about, Polly wrote that song about the famous ghost and suicide at the Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego. There's a guest, her name's Kate Morgan, and it's a very famous story of, the Hotel Del Coronado, the famous hotel in San Diego. And there's a story of a woman who was supposedly going to meet a lover, kind of like a love affair thing, and the guy never showed up, and she committed suicide. So it's from the perspective of this ghost. Oh. And Polly actually stayed in that room, and that's when she started writing that song, The Haunted Room. There's one haunted room. And she had a really crazy ghost experience, actually, when she was in that room.
Well, I'm getting shivers. I'm getting shivers. Yeah. So how do you guys split your songwriting chores? Is it she develops a song on her own, or you do it on your own, and then you get together the whole band? Or is it more collaborative? How do you guys work that?
It's exactly like how you described it, pretty much, for the most part. There are exceptions to certain songs, but for the most part, I have my song pretty developed in that the theme, the main melody, the main chord progressions, and Polly does the same. And then we come together as a band and we kind of leave it open a lot of times to how is a song going to go, because you kind of to keep some dynamic elements to the album. It's kind of like we have the main melody, the chord progression and the themes and the lyrics, but we're able to to build the album around, all right, this, we've got a skate punk song, this song is, we've kind of either got to do something really different with it, or, we kind of build the album around making sure there's a flow to mm-hmm. how the songs, the pace and the dynamics of the album, I guess.
Now, was Pauly in rehab before the album got issued? That's what I was reading.
No. She was not. She went to rehab shortly after we finished recording. So actually, while we were getting the album mixed is when okay. she went in. And I've never been so proud of one person, because she just called me up one day. I was actually on a tour playing some acoustic shows with some friends. And she called me up and was like, "I'm checking myself into rehab. I don't have control over my life anymore because of, you know, alcohol. And I'm going to go fix this." I mean, it's amazing. A lot of people never admit that. A lot of people aren't brave enough or strong enough to admit that and then go and do it. And so, I mean, it really shows how strong she is and how well she knows herself and her body and what she has to do.
And how's she doing now?
It's incredible. She's doing really well. I'm sure that it's not easy all the time for her. I know she's being on the road. I'm sure this particular situation might not be the easiest for her, and she is doing an incredible job.
Well, we've only got time to listen to one other track of y'all's, and another one off of Death in Venice Beach, and I want us to go out with Radio Silence. So now that is one of your songs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of my songs.
Right. And so what's the story behind Radio Silence?
Yeah, that is a song about being in a relationship and being the one to dip out first, because I was talking to somebody pretty heavily and I really was into this person. And then all of a sudden, you know, the correspondence was pretty sparse. And it's one of those things where, although that person kind of dipped out first, I wanted to rewrite the history of it. Kind of like, in my mind, the way to make it seem like it was my idea. And it's kind of like, I'm not fired, I quit. And rewriting the history of something is very therapeutic. And, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Inglourious Basterds, the idea of rewriting history is really cool to me. And to even on a very small scale, to make yourself feel better, sometimes that's a way to do it. And so it was therapeutic and cathartic to have tell the story in the way that I wish it had gone down.
Well, Jen, thanks so much for speaking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
Yes, thank you for having me. This is really cool. It's been fun to talk about it all.
Well, let's get some Radio Silence happening. It's the Bomb Pops here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Delivering some Radio Silence, that was the Bomb Pops here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, track off the new album Death in Venice Beach. Thanks again to their guitarist Jen Razavi for speaking with me today, and thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Next week my guest will be Sam Allen, and he's a guitarist in the New York City area rock and punk band Wildlife. They have a new album out called Year of the Snake, and we'll find out all about it. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.